All right. Today on the ET podcast, we have Dusty Reed. He is the Cajun Picasso. If you haven't heard that name before, you are probably new to Lafayette. But I've seen the Cajun Picasso name throughout town a good bit, especially off of Johnson Street. And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up. He's also Festival International's 2024 artist for this year. So you're going to want to hang out and hear his story and see how he became the artist for 2024's Festival International. And yeah, it's going to be a good podcast. Y'all hang around and listen up. So before we get started, I'm going to let you know about our presenting sponsor is Chase Group Construction. Basically, if you're looking to build something or renovate a business, they take the lead and become your one point of contact for the entire design build process. And that's what they do. They design and build. So it's kind of an architect and construction company all in one. They have a diverse portfolio of tons of projects that range from medical centers to popular restaurants and multi-unit shopping centers. Check them out at chasegroupconstruction.com. All right, Dusty, I'm glad to have you on the podcast. I'm excited to talk about all the stuff you have going on. So how's it going?
Oh, I mean, it's going great. I mean, it's always day. Every day it's like something new. You know, people have been popping up and ask me to do things. It feels good. I've always wanted to feel wanted, I guess.
All right. Hey, well, I know that you've been making some moves pretty recently with your studios and the places your art is at. So I want to talk a little bit about that in just a moment. But first, I kind of want to know, are you you're originally from this area? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, from here. Grew up in Youngsville. Love Youngsville. Youngsville's so awesome. Went to Green Tea Linden, then Youngsville Middle, and then I think we moved when I was like 12. But both of my sisters went to Tacoma High, and one of my sisters lived in Youngsville, so we kind of gave the address for that. So I got to go to Tacoma High. Loved it. Did art all 4 years, and acting, drama, and stuff like that. Yeah. So grew up in Youngsville. About 12, 13, moved to Lafayette, off of Johnson Street. Yeah.
All right.
It's my place.
So tell me about your journey as an artist. Were you always a creative kid growing up? Like, was that your passion, or did you think at one point that you wanted to be a cop or a doctor? Like, what was your path early on in the childhood?
Yeah, as a kid, I would always, like, try to, you know, make things and do things like that. I think when I was younger, of course, like, every kid wanted to be, like, a paleontologist or an archaeologist. Right. But I'll never forget, like, I was always bad at spelling, even though I have a degree in English. Right? Always, you know, bad at spelling, but I remember I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Just because you have a degree doesn't mean you're great at it.
That's what people think, though. I don't know what it is. I can't spell. Well, you don't have a degree in English. Whatever. But yeah, I wanted to be a paleontologist, archaeologist, like all other kids. And but I couldn't spell it. My teacher, it was like, well, write something you can spell. So I wrote fireman. So I didn't really want to do that. I never forget when I was in eighth grade, wanted to be a chef for some reason. And but I couldn't. I never knew how to cook. I remember writing in my journal, and this guy read my journal, and he's like, oh, Dusty wants to be a chief, misspelled chef, of course. I know. But then, as time growing, my sister, she would paint and draw. You know, she's 10 years older than me, and she was in art at Como, and she was super, super talented, drawing, like, realistic things and things with color pencils and stuff. And so then that's where I kind of picked that up, and I wanted to create. And so all 4 years of high school, you know, that's what I did. I did art, loved painting, loved sculpting, loved all of that stuff. And then, I was supposed to go to school for art, art or acting. I got to choose, which one. But then it ended up being where one of my teachers said, I used too many black lines, and it, made me sad. So I just, I'm just going to quit. So I quit, art from 1999 to like 2005, 2006.
Really?
Yeah, I really did. And so what I did instead.
That's like 6-7 years, man.
Yeah, yeah, it was a long time. And it would, I don't know why, but it would just make me sad to like see art or do anything because it's like, oh, I just knew something was in me that I was supposed to do that. And so, yeah, so what I did instead, I would just collect things, just collect, you know, antiques and just different objects, stuff that I thought was cool, and just I would display them and just, like, arrange things. I think that's how I got my sense of, you know, composition and, you know, colors and stuff like that. But when I started doing art, I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't. I knew what you knew in high school. You know, I knew the... You know, the art that everyone's supposed to know and, you know, the people. But no, nothing. I started and I had to do. And I didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. I just wanted to do my own thing, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So your story is quite interesting. It reminds me of another podcast that I listened to. This is... Mike Rowe. I don't know if you know who Mike Rowe is. He's the voice behind a lot of the Discovery Channel things back in the day. I think he still has the podcast, but it started out as a podcast that was like maybe 15, 20 minutes long, and it was for the short attention span. And now it's like he's got hour and a half long podcasts, kind of like this show. And one of his earlier episodes, it was something to do with the life of a tortured artist. And it ultimately was about two different artists. One was Michael Jackson, and another one was, I don't know if it was Leonardo da Vinci or one of the other older, no, I think it was Beethoven. So I don't know why I got those mixed up, but yeah, anyway. By you telling me about your story, it made me think something like it felt a little similar. Not to say that you were tortured, but you had a liking to art, and you felt like that was something that was in you, but you were, I guess, not to say ridiculed, but like kind of made to feel some type of way
right
about art.
Right.
And it caused you to not want to pursue art for years. Yeah,
for years. And it would make me sad. Like, I didn't go to any, you know, museums or anything like that, which was actually at the end. You know, when I did go, I'll never forget that first time I walked into, you know, the Hilliard. I had my gallery for a year before I walked into the Hilliard. And it's just like, I was just... It made me cry because it's the exhibition I had saw was just, it was, I think his name was John Hawthorne, and I didn't go to, you know, UL, you know, everybody, you know, oh, you know who that is? I didn't, you know, but when I saw his work, and just the stuff he had did, it was just, it made me know that what I was doing was right, you know, and that's, there's not all these rules and stuff like that we might not be told, but just, you know, just everyone, you know, kind of believes and things like that. But yeah, it's sad sometimes, you know, not, you know, wanting to do something and not being able to, but just something came over me and it's like, I have to do it. And I have to do everything you can. You know, you're told that you can't make it in your hometown. I mean, that's what you're told.
Everybody's told that. Yeah.
And, you know, and as an artist, you know, a visual artist, you're told to, first thing is like, go to New Orleans, you know, go to Houston, go to Austin, paint some fleur-de-lis, you know, do all of this stuff. And so, you know, because I was told things in the past when it comes to art, I was like, oh, no, absolutely not. You know, I'm not going to make it somewhere else and then come back to my hometown. And then everybody wants, you know, something of mine. I wanted to do it to prove, you know, to myself and, you know, to everyone else that it can be done. You know, it can be done. It's a lot of work. It's hard. But you can still be true to yourself. You don't have to be a sellout or anything like that. You can do it in your hometown, and you definitely can do it here, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of want to stay on this topic a little bit because I grew up in a little small town, Turkey Creek. Okay. And there, the career choices, essentially, especially if you didn't have an education to speak of, if you were just mainly just trying to find a job that paid well, like if you wanted something that paid well, your choices were, of course, the obvious, the oil field. Mm-hmm. You know, go down to South Louisiana to the coast and hop on a helicopter. A lot of people came to Lafayette and took a helicopter onto the rigs, or worked on a land rig somewhere locally, or worked the high lines, or mm-hmm. be a lineman, essentially work the electricity poles, right. You know, go on storm jobs. But if you were, quote unquote, the weird kid uh-huh. in school, you know, the artsy mm-hmm. guy, I loved to draw. Me and a buddy of mine, we would draw in class while class is going on, math is being taught. We were over there, like, sketching out, like, tribalistic tattoos and, you know, all these crazy abstract designs. And I remember in high school when art class was presented to me, I was so excited to take that class. Right. Even though I didn't feel like I needed it, you can always learn something. Mm-hmm. And whenever I took that class, one of the things that, and I'm not trying to brag on myself by any means, but every time I was painting something, everybody in the class, all my classmates, would always tend to want to stare at or look at what I was doing mm-hmm. while they were also painting, because they knew that whatever I was doing was like going to be totally different than what everybody else yeah. is doing. And the teacher was down for it. He was like, just right. y'all do you.
That's good. That's whatever. Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
But you can't, in Turkey Creek, essentially, you couldn't make a living doing art, because mm-hmm. unless you sold mass-produced Florida Lees or, you know, right. the stuff that sells a lot. Yep. The Florida, like you mentioned Florida yeah, Lee, that's the thing you see a lot.
Yeah, because that's, you know, that's what old Mark Tatonts and everybody would say, oh, paint a Florida Lee, you know, everybody. And then it's like, not everybody really wants that anymore. They're kind of sick of that kind of thing.
Yeah, because how many Florida Lees do we have now?
I know. It's a bunch. And, I mean, now you can go to, you know, Hobby Lobby or something like that and get that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't want to do it. It took me a while, but then I developed my language, you know, how I was, how I was going to express things. And I just wanted to paint, you know, me. I had just all these years of maybe assembling things, but not actually creating. And so I had so much to say. I still have so much to say, you know, and now that I'm learning new mediums, I get to, you know, take this one medium and then do it into to another one. So I get to retell like a story in a different, learn new methods on how to do things. It's fun. I mean, it's exciting, you know, cause it's part of me. It's part of me. It's part of us. It's part of, you know, what's going on kind of thing. You know, I don't do a lot of political things. I don't think I've actually, I always wanted to, I always wanted to be one of those, like, oh, I want to be a serious, like, kind of, I want to, you know, drink and do, I'm just like, I don't have time for that. I want to make and I want to do, yeah. you know? So, it's exciting. It's fun. Have a good life. I was supposed to be just a teacher, you know, that's the way you do it. And then you have your, you know, your free time, to be able to paint or do whatever. But I took the leap. I got my master's from UL. I didn't want to go back to school for art. I didn't want to go for art. Now I was like, I'm going to do communication, because you just have to talk, but there's no talking. Did my painting and stuff like that, developed my language. And
when you say develop your language, mm-hmm. are you saying develop your actual spoken language or develop your artistic language?
Yeah, my visual language.
There you go.
So yeah, so that's kind of how the Cajun Picasso came out, because it was more in a cubist kind of way. I mean, that's the closest thing people could say that it was like, oh, it has many faces or many eyes, you know. Oh, that's Picasso, you know. that's kind of, I mean, that's what I knew, you know.
Yeah,
because I remember when I painted that first one, the gallery director's just like, it's like Cajun, but it's like Picasso. It's like a Cajun Picasso. And then I was like, okay, yeah, sure.
You know? Grab onto that.
Yeah, I grabbed onto it. It's weird. Like, you know, my feelings about that name have changed throughout the years. It's just kind of like my name, Dusty. You know, I remember when I wanted to be, it was a while when I wanted to be a governor. So it wasn't Dusty.
Wow.
Yeah, it was Dustin. And when I wanted to be a teacher, it was Dustin. And people, you know, this would call me Dusty sometimes. I'm like, it's Dustin. You know, it's kind of like the Cajun Picasso kind of now. Because sometimes it's not taken as seriously. So now what I use it more is like my, you know, my stuff around here. People know me as that. It's more of like my folk art, my heart.
Yeah.
You know, my heart. And you know, I'll make more things to that's more, you know, palatable and for more people to like and to have, you know, under that. But it's really all me. I mean, because it doesn't matter if I'm making, you know, a big painting or this big installation or something, or a little voodoo doll, you know, which takes me longer to do than those other things. But it's just I love being there and being able to touch my work, and it's the energy, you know. And that's why I like to be around people when they see my work, you know, and they see, oh, cool, you know, all that. I'm like, oh, go touch, you know, go touch it, go, you know, look, I pick it up, I do it. And that was always something that I noticed that, you know, was kind of different than a lot of other artists, because they you're kind of taught
to not touch,
to not touch, and that someone else is going to sell an artist's work. You know, that's one thing that they don't really. There's a couple things they don't teach you, you know, at art school, which I've learned that they. I'm like, oh God, you've been an artist for 20 years. You don't know how to put, you know, hangers on your paintings. You know, but it's how to sell your work and talk about your work.
How to market it? Yeah.
How to market it? But it's. I don't even kind of think about it like that. I think about it as like, I just want to everybody know how much I love doing it. Like, I really do. Like, I get excited when, you know, something happens. I'm depressed. I go, you know, somewhere like Walmart or somewhere and just like look at the spray paint cans. You know, I just, you know, it all revolves around art and, you know, my passion to do it. And I, now that I had this opportunity that more people are going to see my work, really excited with this whole festival thing. You know, I really am. I've always wanted to do it. I really have. You know, I was a little butthurt, you know, that I wasn't asked before, because I was like, man, I really did a lot of, charity things and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't do that kind of stuff for that, but it's like, man, I'm finally glad they asked me to do it. I'm finally happy.
All right. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but it's time to get in my sponsor. And we're going to talk a little bit more about your Festival International year and see what that's about. But first, the Music Academy of Acadiana. So if you want to explore your artistic, side. And if you're a more of a musically inclined person, even if you're not musically inclined, maybe you suck at music. The Music Academy of Acadiana can help you in that department. You can be a young thing. You can be an old thing. You know, maybe you're, not to use Dusty's name, but maybe you're a little dusty around the edges or on the top of your head. Who knows? But they can help you unleash your musical potential and improve your talent in instruments and on your voice, with your voice. Or if you're not good with instruments, or if you don't have a voice, if you want to learn audio production, you know, help make things sound better, they teach that too. They have a ton of experienced instructors that cater to students of all ages and styles, hence the young and old thing mentioned. So graduates have excelled in college and major music competitions. They've appeared on American Idol and The Voice. Really cool. It's founded by UL Lafayette Music School graduate Tim Benson, who is a member of the local emo cover band called The Criers. You need to check them out. If you are a fan of early 2000s screamo emo music, they sound just like all your favorite bands. Trust me, really cool. And they're touring. They're going all over the place. And I'm pretty sure you can have them at your event. I don't know what that looks like for them, but check them out. But that's just an honorable mention for the founder of the school. Ultimately, their goal is to make music lessons fun, educational, to help foster the next generation. musicians and creative thinkers. Check them out at their website, musicacademyacadiana.com. And now, so Festival International, man, that's a big one. And you mentioned that you were, quote, a little butthurt that you weren't selected earlier.
Before, because I've always done those festivals.
Yeah.
Festival Acadien, Festival International. You know, I was that kind of artist, you know, because there's so different, many different, like, ways to do your visual art. You can go the museum route, you can do the festival route, you can go the boutique route or gallery route, and there's a bunch. But I wanted to do them all. And, you know, setting up for a festival and doing, it's a lot of work. But I love it. I'm always the first one there and the last one to leave. I love to help people and, you know, set up things. It's super fun. But yeah, man, I did those. And like, I was like, okay, now finally, it's about time that someone that actually does those festivals gets asked to do it. Cause it really had been a long time. And, you know, Kelly Guidry, one of my favorite, I mean, everyone is my favorite, but Kelly is—he's the man. You know, I think he was like 2008. You know, he always does the festivals. You know, since then, you know, really a lot of the people, wonderful, wonderful, God, phenomenal, wonderful artists, but they really hadn't participated in the festivals. So I had that feel for it. I got to talk to a lot of the people. You know, meet a lot of people throughout. You know, doing those festivals. So the piece I created. You know, I just wanted to do something different, you know. You know, there had been sculptures before and wall-hanging pieces of art and mixed-media things. But I wanted something kind of larger than life. You know, my first idea was like, oh, I want this 15-foot Zydeco man, and I want his feet to just kind of do like that, like those cat clocks, you know.
Yeah.
And people to go by and touch it, you know, and then eventually maybe we – make like a putt-putt course and they go, you can hit it in between the legs or something. Yeah. They're like, okay, maybe. But yeah, the piece I did, I kind of designed it around a painting I did probably my third 24 by 36, you know, larger canvas back in 2007. I had painted maybe 2008, something right there, early. I painted this Zydeco man. It's my first Zydeco guy. So, and I loved these piano keys where I had, you know, around it. And I was like, oh, I want to make this big. So I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So you said Kelly Guidry mm-hmm. was the 2008 artist.
Around-ish. Yeah.
So you made it as the artist for Festival International just a God, a little over 10 years now.
Yeah.
After Kelly. Now, obviously, there are tons of other artists.
Right.
In Lafayette, yeah. In the area. So I'm pretty sure if a Festival International person is listening, they'd be like, you know, I mean, we had you, you know, in mind for a long time.
Yeah.
Because the Cajun Picasso name, as I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, has been around. Since I moved here in 2010, mm-hmm. I remember on Johnson Street, I want to say, is it behind a bank?
It was behind a bank. The bank was next, across the way. I think it was Mid-South Bank.
Yes.
It's still there. And then Squires. And then I had this building in the back, right across the street from Piccadilly. Oh, man.
And
it's so wonderful. People still, you know, talk about that place because when I... So I had very little money. I was teaching at Remington. I mean, I was doing really well. I loved it. I loved it there. But I was just working kind of part-time and painting. And I had a little bit of money. And I was like, I want to do something. Now, granted, I've shown at art galleries and stuff like that. But still had not gone to any museums, galleries, or anything ever.
At that point?
No. So I wanted to get my work out here at Lafayette because the gallery I was in was in Henderson, and it was called the Gallery of Cajun History, and Rodrigue had did some stuff there back in the day and all some wonderful artists. And so people knew me there, and then collectors that were, you know, on the highway, they would bring it, you know, my work to, you know, Texas and Mississippi and, you know, Oklahoma and everything like that. And then when I went, I was like, man, you know, I want to show my work here. So I had went downtown, you know, this is, you know, and I embraced, you know, all those people, Rodrigue, Floyd Sonnier, all the people that had, you know, Earl Hebert, all of those people that I did, you know, painted Louisiana things. And I felt like at that time, they were kind of looking, not looking at that kind of stuff. It was more other stuff, not embracing those people. And then I remember, you know, going down to the oil center and, you know, feeling that, oh, if it wasn't in, you know, wasn't painted in oil or wasn't, you know, a Louisiana landscape, it wasn't art. So I was just this weird in-between thing. So I'm like, okay, I have very little money, but I'm going to go look for a place. And I found that place, and they wanted a 3-year lease and my first and last month's rent, and that was all of my money.
And this the spot on Johnson.
On Johnson, yeah. It was, what was I paying at the time? Like $1,200 a month. So I had $2,400. I had maybe $2,700. Yeah, so I had $2,700, and I gave it to them, and I signed a 3-year lease.
Wow.
Yeah, I signed a 3-year lease.
When was this?
This was 2009, 2010, yeah. Kind of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did that, and I didn't know what I was doing. And then I didn't have money to, like, fix up the place. So I remember buying these stickers, and they were these circle stickers. They had holes in the wall, so I was just like, putting these stickers on. I was painting on stuff, drawing. The lady's like, oh, Miss Janie Bayard, she had the property. And she's like, oh, baby, do whatever. I'm like, okay, I will. And it was neat because they had, like, it was a downstairs, and they had this upstairs part. And so I got to, you know, put other stuff, and it was really, really fun. But I had no idea what a gallery was supposed to look like. So, but everyone thought, you know, oh, well, yeah, Dusty's done, you know, all this stuff. But no, I was just pretending to do that. I was just like, this is what I think, you know, because I wanted the whole experience, and I embraced that. I embraced the imperfections, and I wanted to give people the opportunity to see my process, to almost walk into all of Dusty's stuff that he's going to do something with or paint on or whatever, and then be able to go in and see the art on the walls. Because it always made me sad, you know, seeing a circle and a triangle and a square, you know, pictures of that in like a museum where that's on a wall. But then those people, you know, in the back roads and stuff who have that need to create, those outsider artists, those folk artists, where they'll stack their junk, you know, and then create art. You know, that's art if it's outside or inside, if it's in the trash or not, if it's a circle drawing on a square. You know, it's just the presentation of it. So I kept that up for years. And I guess around 3 years into doing it, and I would love to, you know, sell other people's art. And it was weird because, like, I was always there.
Did you do, you did consignment?
Yeah, at the beginning I did. And, like, you would walk into this first part, and then I had mostly, almost everybody else's stuff. And I would say, I love this work, da 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 da. And then a lot of times people would just say, well, where's your work? Oh, well, my work's over here. I loved, you know, being able to curate something like that, because it was all stuff that brought me joy. And it's like, God, I just absolutely love that. So I had it all, dustified for around 3 years, 4 years. And then some patrons had come in, and they wanted to move me. They wanted to move me where, it was a cookie place, Indulge, maybe, in River Ranch.
Yeah.
Where they're
expensive
they're
at, property,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, they wanted to move me there. And they're like, Dusty, this is going to be great for you. You're going to have these pieces. I was like,
large windows. All
yeah.
That.
And I was like, no, I want people to be able to experience this kind of thing going in. So right behind Squires on the other side, there was this other large building, and where I could have done that, did workshops and classes and stuff like that too. And so that was an opportunity for me to get, but then I would have to give up that little spot. And I didn't want to, because I wanted people to, you know, I tried to pitch the idea, well, I'm going to be on that side of the road, and then there's Squires right here, and then there's me, so I want to take a limousine from this and then go into the thing and all kind of stuff. I want both of them, because I wanted people to experience that and to try to, you know, because, you know, art is something that, you know, it's a status thing in a lot of times. And sometimes that kind of upsets me sometimes, you know. I want everyone to be able to appreciate, and I want everyone here, you know, to be able to own something of mine and stuff like that.
Okay. Know? So you're saying some artists or art is not accessible mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. certain people. So, like, because mm-hmm. typically when somebody, I don't want to say of lower income, but if they want to put art on their wall, the place to go to is usually Hobby Lobby, Walmart, At Home, you know, these mass-produced places. You get a print with a thin canvas, and you hang that, and, mm-hmm. you know, you have art.
Yeah.
Now, even that sometimes is high-priced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen larger canvases. Now, they're large, like mm-hmm. like you said, 24, 36, sometimes even larger, go for, like, $150, $200.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what you would sell your art for, and how would that line up and be approachable and accessible? But I think everybody enjoys art and would like to have art.
Yeah. Well, we have so many opportunities now. I guess what people really need to understand, I guess, like, about the whole art thing is, yeah, you might, you know, 24 by 36, somebody that's just maybe just starting out, that might be $300, $500, something like that. You go back after and you can sell it and you can pretty much get your money back, or at least half of your money, you know, you buy something for you won't get your money out or anything like that. So,
yeah. So I want to go back to the Festival International, piece that you mentioned. So I actually, I borrowed the photos that nice. Festival International posted. So let me go ahead and pull that up so that people can see. So this is an image. I think this is the reveal day that happened about a week ago or so.
Yeah. It was at Warehouse 535 yep. On Garfield. Oh, that was so cool. And yeah, we really had this black, like, little canvas thing on front, and it was like a real unveiling.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I had these mobiles that kind of go on the top. I just did it because I thought it was fun. I knew they wouldn't be able to use them on the poster. But I just, because I wanted that extra little thing. So I had the mobiles, like, coming up with the musical notes, and then the black thing, and, you know, we unveiled it, and it was really, really cool to see people's faces seeing it for the first time.
This is a shot of you. Looks like you're working with it. You're doing something, and this is the piece that you're talking about.
Right.
It's this Zydeco man with the piano pieces around it. It looks like a, like you said, Cajun Picasso design. Like, it's just something very, it's very abstract, but it also feels native.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, I don't know. It's the person that called you or kind of said it's like a Cajun Picasso was on it, like, was in that vein of, mm-hmm. like, this feels familiar,
mm-hmm.
yet I don't want to say exotic, but different.
Yeah. And that's kind of my language. And what I always did was, you know, take that cubism kind of thing and just kind of, you know, simplify it a little bit more and use my color. Our colors around here, you know, I don't know why it still kind of bothers me. People from, you know, like, that have gone to New Orleans and then come here for a festival, they'll be like, oh, this is very New Orleans. I'm like, no, it's not. We use totally different colors. The Acadiana colors that, you know, that I use in these blues and reds, that's not in New Orleans. You know, that's not the same thing.
Right.
It's different colors.
Orleans is more purples, blacks, mm-hmm. greens.
Yeah.
Golds, obviously.
Yeah. I've always done my bright colors. And at the beginning when I painted, oh man, everything was so bright and I couldn't have anything, and it was so bright and I had to do it. And then after a while, I was like, man, it was that little kind of self-doubt kind of thing. Well, all these other artists, you know, they paint all dark and everything like that. So then I had got like this depression kind of stage and everything. So I'm like, oh, I just would spray paint the sides of my canvases, you know, black to make them look more dramatic, you know, stuff like that. But it was still me, you know, even though my colors have changed a bit, there's still that boldness to them. And most of the way I approach color, it's more in an kind of organic, like in the moment kind of way, you know, because composition and I comes first for me. The colors are kind of like second, you know.
Right.
It's kind of whatever's around. I use it right then and there just to kind of get something. Because I think that's very important. I mean, you can have a Ferrari, you know, awesome color in the world. You take off that color and it could be like nasty color, it's still a Ferrari, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Something about that's still good.
And so last photo of your Festival International art piece, this is the your larger piece, also photographed in the shot is the pin that also graphic artist Bert Durand helped put that together. And you know, Bert Durand, he does he works with Festival International and takes all of that year's artist work and translates it into a digital graphic version. And
he did an awesome
job. Oh, every
man
year.
I was super impressed. I mean, when I had met him for the first time, you know, for the unveiling, and when he said he did it, I was like, God, I was like, I really couldn't have thought of it better, because just the way he had did the poster and like took my musical notes and then because there's a lot of small little details in the piece itself, and he took those and even the writing that, you know, I'm so glad I didn't have to do all the writing, you know, that he created that. I mean, it looks like something I would have done, you know.
Yeah.
And then just the way he did the pen, simplified it and stuff. Because when I designed it, you know, when I wanted to have those piano keys all the way around it, I wanted to give it that almost icon, kind of Lady of Guadalupe kind of vibe to it. You know, almost popping out. I was designing it more, you know, for the pin than the poster, because I'm like, God, I'm going to want 1,000 of these pins.
Right, I know. Yeah. Everybody's going to want that pin. Right. It's a nice looking pin.
I think it's a super cool pin. And, you know, my whole thing was, you know, after I did it, you know, people are going to see the original piece. So I want them to be able to experience it, you know. And that's when I had all these, like, hidden things that you can't see on the poster or the pin, where, like, the hands that are holding up this paintbrush, the hands have hinges on them. And then so they actually can turn, and then I have like screws where the whole hands can go up or come right here and then flop over, and they're painted on both sides. And so like with the hands themselves, I have these nails that go through that hold up the paintbrush. So like when I can actually take the paintbrush off and, you know, point.
And this is on the piece that you did.
This is on the piece, yeah. And then like the feet. The shoes,
they move. Everything moves. Yeah, that's crazy.
The shoes, you know, go like that. When I decided I was gonna do this, I had went downtown and I, you know, just like look on the roads and stuff like that, and I was like found all kind of little parts and like washers and things like that, you know, that was on the road, and I used that on the shoes, and then like I, you know, made some little shoe strings, so those move. The mouth is, you know, turns, and the eyes turns,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, things like that. I love things that are kind of tactile, and I like that about art. And of course I love painting and stuff like that. My mixed media work didn't come until about three years after I was painting. That's when I started messing around with, you know, cabinet doors and, you know, more of my found objects that I had started collecting. But I think that kind of stuff's kind of needed now, because we see all of these, you know, images on Instagram and Facebook and all these things of some wonderful pieces of art, but it's that grand scale of it, you know. And even we were talking earlier about, like, you know, prints, you know. And while you might get something from Hobby Lobby or something, you know, even sometimes they still have some kind of texture and things like that. It doesn't have that same feel.
No, there's no soul in it.
No, yeah. And I think that's what I love about that I can't quite get with painting is when I'm working with like a three dimensional thing, because it's my yeah. It's my hands. Yeah. It's my hands that's on it.
So we were talking earlier about local art and just kind of like the accessibility of it and all that good stuff. And we bought a house in 2022, and we were coming from our starter home, and I was like, you know what, I want like a large art piece. Mm-hmm. And I was racking my brain of like, what art would I want? Like the taste of the way our house, the kind of the furniture we were getting. This is the first time we ever bought like, mm-hmm. like matching furniture. Normally we had like hand-me-down furniture,
right.
And we were good with that. But we sold our first home at the height of the market in 2021. So we made a little bit of money off of it. And I was like, I want to make our house look cohesive. Mm-hmm. And so there was a girl who does art. She still does art, but she works with Munkus Park at the moment. Mm-hmm. And she does art just kind of on the side. She's always kind of done it on the side. But like there was a moment where she was pushing it real hard and like constantly making TikTok videos and everything of her making her art. Her name is Victoria Alamon.
Okay.
Yeah. She was a sensation for the New Orleans Saints. Mm-hmm. And she did this type of art where she used gold leaf, gold foil.
Mm-hmm.
And she used a texture practice or format where she would take essentially, it's like some type of putty, and it's pink and it dries. I think it dries white,
okay.
or something like, or gray. But like she would do these like rolling, almost like wave texture swoops on this canvas, and she had made something that just called out to me. And I said, look, I would like a piece very similar to what you have here, but I want the Vermilion River. I want a cut, like a section of the Vermilion River in gold leaf foil going across the canvas. And I don't know if I sketched out something or if she did. I know for sure she sketched out something, but I was trying to visualize or like trying to explain. And I told her, I said, I like that little swoopy putty stuff that you mm-hmm. use, all the texture. I love that. And I want it to be white, grays, like that kind of monochromatic mm-hmm. thing with the gold. And what she came out with was so amazing. And it weighs like 20 something pounds.
Okay.
It's heavy.
Uh-huh.
It's a big piece. It's like 40 inches by 50 inches. But we had a large blank wall and I wanted something on there. And, I paid her for it. She told me once I picked it up, she gave me friend prices. I did mm-hmm. not realize she was giving me friend prices, but I still paid pretty good for it. She said normally she would charge this amount, and she's like, mm-hmm. I gave you half. I'm like, I didn't even ask for that, but mm-hmm. thank you. But like, dude, it's the best piece of art I've ever seen, because it means something. It mm-hmm. feels like it has this soul with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I go now at Hobby Lobby and at home, and while visually the pieces look nice,
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't have it's that same something. Thing. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're getting at, is that's what art truly is. It should be something that pulls this emotion or this feeling out from you. Not just, oh, it looks good on the wall.
It looks good on the wall. Yeah, I think when, you know, people that have, you know, homes and stuff, they look at those things differently. Because they'll put, you know, they'll have everything matching, and then they want their art to match, too. And I guess, like, as an artist, like, thinking about that, it's like, well, then you don't want it to be seen. You know, you want it to be almost kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, some people are like, oh, can you do this? But can you do this in purple? Because my couch is purple. I'm like, no, you can buy a couch that matches around my art. I mean, that'd be cooler.
Yeah.
Because like, it's different, you know. And that's kind of one way, you know, I've been very, very blessed where, you know, I stuck to my guns a lot of times where I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, this is it. You know?
Somebody should buy your art because that's the style that you do.
And that's what speaks to them, or they want it for,
you know, whatever kind of reason makes him happy or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I chose Victoria. She was doing a particular style mm-hmm. that just stuck out with me. And it just so happened that the way we were, like, the colors of our, the paint of the wall that we were going into and the furniture that we had picked, it was kind of all matching in.
Yeah.
I wasn't purposely trying to do that from the get-go, mm-hmm. but, like, it just kind of came together.
It all came together. Yeah. I think it's really cool when, I like to do that with, you know, when I do take on commissions and things like that. Which I like to do, but I just want to make sure the people are cool too, you know, because a lot of times I get to that point where, okay, I know what I want to do, but then I want to ask a few things and then I'm just kind of a pleaser. So it's like, oh man, I'm worried about more of, like, you know, that kind of other stuff. So it's difficult to do, you know, those kind of commissions because you're, as an artist, you're always worried that the other person won't be happy, you know, with it or like, or be excited as you are, you know.
And the thing is, if they're not happy with it,
right,
sell it.
Right.
And buy another piece.
Or buy something else. Buy something else. Yeah, that's always a good thing. Just buy something
else. Yeah, I mean, but I think that's the beauty of having art done that, because I didn't want to see what she was doing. And she didn't, and Victoria didn't want to show me. She gave me, like, the sketches of, like, kind of, like, the overall layout, like the vision that I had, she was making sure that it aligned and she did her own style with it. And I just told her the color scheme that we kind of liked, which already kind of fit what she was doing. And I said, I like what you do already. Just
do
this, this layout with the Vermilion River. And she chose the section of the Vermilion River on her own. Like, I didn't even, I kind of showed her like a map. I was like, hey, I kind of like the way the river flows. And, you know, you pick which river part. And she chose the portion of Vermilion River near Pinhook. And she said the reason why she chose that was because that part of the Vermilion River is significant to the founding of Lafayette. Like, that was kind of where Lafayette kind of grew from.
Oh, cool.
So okay. I thought that was cool. I thought that was unique.
That's awesome. And to be able, you know, to have something in your house that you had some kind of say on, and then, you know, to having an artist, you know, bring that to life. I think that's a cool thing. I mean, you're going to enjoy that.
Oh, we love it. I look at it all the time. And I'm like, man. And I'm scared to even touch it now. Like, even though it's, like, screwed onto the wall, like, I have, like, thick screws in the studs of my house to hold this sucker on there because I don't want it to fall. Like, I don't want to dust it. I don't want to do nothing with it. I just – and it doesn't have dust on it, at least not that I can tell. But, like, I don't want to move it. Like, I feel like it's such a part of –
Yeah, and I think that's what art kind of becomes. It becomes a part of the person who has it in their homes, because that was a really neat thing to kind of feel, you know, when I started, you know, selling my work, and, you know, people were buying something that I did. You know, and then sometimes paying, you know, more money than I could afford, you know, to that idea. And so that, and then it's in their home. So, and that's, they buy this home and then it's in there. And then, so it's like part of me is in there, and then it becomes, man, it's just, it's the coolest, kind of weird, like, humbling kind of, you know, feeling. It's just, it's very different. It's very different.
All right, so now I have to ask you, this has been a question that's been burning me up, and I got to ask you, what is your take on all the latest advances in AI technology, specifically around art and primarily digital art, but, like, AI is coming for the throats of creatives. And I use it. I use AI for a lot of different things, you know, whether that be for inspiration or if I need a certain element that, you know, it would take me a little longer to design. But if I just told AI kind of what I'm looking for, maybe I can get close. And then what I do is I'll take it and revise it, vectorize it, revise it. What is your take on AI?
I think it's going to change, of course. It's going to change everything. and all the artistic kind of, you know, paths, and art in general. I think it can, there's some really good things that can be done with it. Really cool. Like, I mean, just like those augmented reality kind of things. I might be in the works with some people to paint something downtown that's going to be like this mural, but then it's going to have, you know, these different parts in it that are going to kind of come alive. And then with that kind of thing, you know, there's these QR codes and people will be, you know, there'll be advertisements and stuff like that within this mural. So it'll tell like stories. As far as like AI things, like typing something in and some things pop out, I think that's a good thing. You still have to execute it, you know, as an artist. What I really like, which I don't know if you can actually do that now, but maybe you can. I don't know with the AI thing. Like put in, you know, Cajun Picasso and put in like 5 or 10 paintings or something like that. And from those 10 paintings, then say, I want to have, you know, a horse in court or something, you know, something in. And then that's, you know, that's really cool because that's some ways that I can see the layout and the composition. And from those ideas, I can go back and create. I really think it's really going to help out with that kind of thing. I think kind of touches on what I was talking about before about that need for us as people, as humans, as everything, to be able to experience and touch. Because even if that thing is printed out, it's still on paper. Yeah. You know, that's kind of the kind of weird thing about like people that do like digital art, which I love that. But then it's almost like they're hearing the same things that photographers had back in the day, you know, where, oh, that's not art, you know, that you're not doing, you're just taking a picture. And then, you know, that went on and went on and went on and went on. And then everyone has a photo, you know, a camera. Or something like that.
Anybody that has a camera now, thinks they're a photographer. Yeah.
And now, which is a good thing and a bad thing, kind of, but now everyone can get art supplies. I mean, you can go to Hobby Lobby, you can go to Walmart, you can go to wherever, Dollar Tree, you know, and get art supplies, canvases, where, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, you had to make your own canvas, you had to go, the paint supplies was very expensive. So it's really great that everyone has the opportunity to create, because that's what I'm all about. I think if you have the OMV to make something, you need to do it. No, there's no time to talk about it. You're supposed to be doing it right now.
Yeah.
As far as the ideas with AI and stuff, I think that's super cool. I'm more worried about printers because like now, you know, before you would just print something and you can slap some, you know, some gesso or some, you know, high gloss or some kind of, you know, texture. And so it'll be a print, but it's going to feel like a real thing that's been around forever. But now the printers can print dimensionally and, you know, like
this 3D kind of,
and now it's like, that kind of worries me. So I'm always gonna have to nail something onto something like that. But it keeps
or add some moving feet.
Add some moving feet. That kind of stuff, you know, 3D printers, all of that things, AI, all of that. As an artist, it challenges me, which I like. I like to see what can I do with it. You know, when flatbed printers, you know, first came around here in Lafayette, that's when I was like, okay, you can do this, but man, I can do some real cool stuff with a flatbed printer, you know, using those things, because to me, that's another medium.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you look at AI, is another medium. And what can you do with it? You have this. Now, how can you take your knowledge on something and bring that to the whole nother level? It's like the whole thing of graduate school and, you know, that kind of thing. It's taking what other people have mastered and then it's putting your own, you know, spin on it and taking your own perspective. And that's kind of the way I'm gonna, you know, hit the whole AI thing. I wish I had, you know, I knew more about like computers and, you know, all of the photoshopping and stuff like that. You know, I wish, and then I kind of don't want to, because like I would be doing some crazy stuff, but that's a whole nother side. Yeah. And I just want to make and enjoy what I'm making, I don't want to, that other side of the stuff, the selling the stuff, the making your social media posts. And
oh, it gets tough.
Oh God. Yeah, it's part of the job, and you have to as an artist, you can't not, you have to do a little bit of all of that stuff and know a little bit, but
as an artist people
that can do it.
I don't know if you can speak the same, but cause I do graphic art. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of stuff on the side from developing Lafayette. I lost my train of thought.
As a graphic artist.
Yeah. So as a graphic artist, oh my God, dude, I was on to something good.
It felt good.
It had a lot of good juju there, man. Oh my gosh. Maybe I'll get it.
Well, you create things, you know. I mean, it's that whole thing. So you get to, you know, use that, you know, that computer kind of side to it, you know, and with Photoshopping and things like that. And then it's great because it gives people that, you know, don't have the, you know, the time or maybe the mess or something like that to be able to paint or create something. I mean, you can do something there in a different kind of time. So.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, doing art and all that good stuff, like the social media side and whatever side you are doing, you have to almost be a jack of all trades. I think this is where I was going. As an artist, you have to kind of be very multifaceted in a lot of different hats because you got to be creative, and you also got to have this business side. And I think that's where there's a lot of a disconnect, especially with younger artists that are coming up and kind of going back to, you can't do this in the small town. Mm-hmm. You can, but you have to know how to market yourself. If your goal is to make money with it, you got to learn how to put yourself in front of the right buyers, which is weird because you don't want to, it's like most artists start out like, I just want to create. I just want to create, but then you think I have to make a living if I want to create art consistently throughout my life.
Yeah.
How do I make money from
it? And so you have to suck in a few things. You know, you can still not have to do people's portraits or something like that, or you know, paint in some kind of other style. I find it always best to, you know, if you're learning and you want to get better at a certain thing, you know, do those. I would suggest that to other people. But you can still be that artist too. You know, that artist, you know, stubborn, you know, where you're going to do your own thing. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to, because, you know, just the creative side that's just one part, you know, that's the creative side is one thing. But once you're going to bring things to the masses and to more people to be able to see, it needs to be, now you have to do weird stuff like sign your piece of work. Okay, if you want to, then you go through this debate, you know, over the years of doing, oh, should I not sign or now do I have to? Or shine on the back or it's up for, it's too big. It's, you gotta think about all those things. Then you gotta think about, well, how I'm gonna hang it. Okay, and then you have to learn how to put wires. And I've dealt with people that have been doing art for 10, 15 years and now they want to bring the art, you know, and, oh, now I wanna sell stuff. Okay, well, why don't you know this? You know, a lot of stuff that it's just not taught, you know, and to be able to, you know, think about it and be able to talk about your work, and to be excited about your work, you know, not everybody has that. They think it's just, oh, I'm going to make it and somebody else is going to sell it. But things have changed so much within the past, you know, 15, 20, 30 years where that used to be the case. You know, you would bring it to an art gallery. I mean, we look around, that concept of an art gallery really thing is, it's not as much as that used to be. You know, it's like antique shops, you know, the old style antique shops where it had, you know, then it styles change, things change, eBay, Hobby Lobby, all of those things have changed where, you know, like an old art gallery, that's why you would pay them 50%, you know, because they would, those people would get other buyers and stuff like that and build your name up. Where now it's a lot more boutiques, I guess, kind of thing, where everyone's creating artwork, especially, you know, after COVID and stuff, which is all wonderful, great thing. But now there's such a constant turnover where it doesn't really matter. Okay, well, we'll still charge you 30%, 40%, 50%, but, you know, we'll see how it works, and then we'll get somebody else. So, I mean, there's still advertising for those people, but it's not the same thing. So now we've come to a time where now the individual has to do much more work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I had to learn that, you know, having my shop on Johnson, you know, I had to learn that. I had to learn, you know, what, you know, I got burned times because once you start a new business, you know, everybody wants, you know, you to donate something for their event and stuff like that. And, you know, after a while, I always wanted to give. My tax people were always, you know, people that do my taxes, like, oh, Dusty, you need to write this off. You need for like donations. You know, I never do that, which is silly, but I just don't because like I'm donating it. That's my thing. I don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is I'm bad on that part kind of part, but it's learning that, you know, a lot of people ask artists to give when they're really not given that much, you know, when you know, especially when they have a business and it's just stuff they're creating. They're not a lot of time they're not ordering everything from, you know, some other state or, you know, country or something like that. You know, it's an original piece of art, you know, and they're the ones that need that, you know. That's why I like, you know, with this festival opportunity I've given, you know, my art is in the forefront. Where, you know, a lot of times art is in the background.
Yeah.
You know, people will decorate with something and then they might like it, but it's going to be still kind of all kind of meshing together. You know, it's like sometimes like when, you know, we have art walks and things like that. You know, they're still, oh, this band's playing or whatever. It's supposed to be the opposite. One day a month, put the art in the front because it's usually not, it's not done that way, you know. It's kind of a struggle for an artist, but it's totally possible. But you just have to do it and not complain and just do it, you know, because it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot. It's just there's no need to complain. And there's a bunch of cliques. There's bunches of cliques. I'm lucky enough to be a part of every clique.
You sound like me in high school. I try to be friends with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fit into one thing. You know, I embrace this, I embrace that, I embrace all of those things. But we have so many opportunities, and everyone can learn from other people. You know, in the past, you know, one artist might make something, then another artist makes something similar, and then right. There's some little, oh, I'm making a Lazy Susan. No, it's my Lazy Susan now. I'm doing this, or I'm using a plasma cutter. I'm doing this, or I'm making an accordion, and da da da. To me, if somebody gets inspired by something that I do, that's a wonderful thing. I always hope that they make it better. You know, that's make me proud. You know, yeah, take it, rip it off, whatever. That's fine. You know, my signature is something. I did it is yeah, something else. Yeah. That's the way I kind of look at it.
That's kind of like the Rodriguez Blue Dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Blue Dog is such a iconic
mm-hmm.
fixture, especially in South Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ripoffs.
There's ripoffs, and it's just so neat when you look at that and like the progression of the Blue Dog and all of that and how it represented one thing and then it moved to another country and another states and, you know, California and Cozumel mm-hmm. and all of these things like that. You know, and it's an artist are, you know, funny, you know, other artists, you know, they're, you know, oh man.
Artists are funny.
Yeah. Artists are, you know, they're always like, oh, well, he's selling out or that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, but you know, you kind of do what you got to do, you yeah. know. He's just made a tremendous impact on, because if it wasn't for, you know, him and Floyd Saunier and people like that, there would be no us, you know. And one of my favorite paintings I painted, actually, 1 year I had my place on Johnson Street. I called it "Standing on the Shoulders of Giants," and it was this, and it's like a subtitle, like artists have big shoes to feel or something like that. And that was the first time I had put like these big giant feet, which I do now for some reason. But yeah, it was this like kind of almost skeleton looking man.
Yeah.
And he was blue, representing Rodrigue. And then the other side, like the other side of the skeleton looking guy, was white. And, you know, had these big old feet. And it was just that there's room on the other artist to, you know, kind of take a stand. And then like his brain kind of spot, you know, part, you know, it's spelled out Picasso, and he was holding this paintbrush, and the paintbrush is kind of drooping and has like some orange on it, and that represented me, you know, that, you know, there's plenty of room for other people to take a stand, to take what they have given us, and to put our own spin on, yeah, on art and on our culture and, you know, of this area. It's just, there's so much room to grow, as a person, as an artist, as everything, because now everything's at our fingertips. You know, everything is there.
Yep.
Everything is there. Everybody can do stuff now. You know.
Well, we're getting close to the end here, so before we head out, I'm gonna go ahead and show your website so that people that are watching can visit your website. It is CajunPicasso.com. That's CajunPicasso.com, just in case you needed the spelling, or if you're watching, you can clearly see it. But just Google Cajun Picasso. My laptop pulled it up right away. Like it pre-filled it. I didn't even I haven't put it in my search bar in a while, and it just like whoop, there it is. And then also do check out festivalinternational.myshopify.com, or go to Festival International's website, festivalinternational.org. I believe that's the original website. This is where you can find the pins and the art and all that stuff to help support the festival and, of course, to perpetuate the art that Dusty has. So go there, check those out, and Dusty, the before we head out, one thing I want to ask is if there was or is one artist, or I guess that's the easiest way to broad stroke it. If there's one particular person, artist, or art that has influenced you as a person from a very young age to who you are now, like what is that one defining piece or person that has like you've held on to?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because it's basically five, and it's a progression. You know, it was Rodrigue first, and I'll never forget going to the old place called T. George, and then it had burned down. It was off Johnson Street. And I remember as a kid going to this restaurant, and you could actually touch the paintings. And I remember
talking about Blue Dog Cafe.
Yeah, the blue. No, is pre Blue Dog. It was called T. George
Cafe. Okay, so T. George. Okay, yeah. I didn't know that was a restaurant.
It was it was right by where the Hampton Toyota is now.
Okay,
and then it's like this old house that's there.
Long time ago, apparently. I don't remember that.
Wild. Yeah, this is pre you, over here. So I remember going there and like touching the painting and seeing like all of these originals. Oh my god. I loved it. And I would scratch it and stuff like that, you know. And then after that, he was always my favorite. And then Floyd Saunier, just the old, you know, the those pencil drawings and everything, that made a huge impact. And then when I was like, okay, I want to kind of start painting and seeing things, I had saw King Rob. He's from around here. What is Rob's last name? Harris, Robert Harris. And who's the other one? The red tricycle, Virgie Banks. Those are my favorite people, because they, Virgie and King Rob, they had that kind of Picasso kind of style. So I remember seeing that. I was like, God, that's kind of what I want to do. And I was already drawing stuff like, and I had never seen any of that stuff before. That kind of, you know, influenced me to do things. There's I'm inspired by a lot of artists, you know, like I said, Kelly, it's influential, you know, in my work. And just the way he, you know, because I believe Kelly's like 10 years older than me, and he's been doing it for 10 years longer. He's been around more, and he's been creating art longer than me, so he's taking a lot of these icons and these symbols from around here and put his spin on them. It's just his thought process is super, super awesome. Yeah, people can see my work, on my website.
Yeah.
But that is so old. Like, I'm not, Facebook and Instagram is the way to do it, and I promise I'm going to start doing that again. I go through these phases where I don't know why, I just don't want to learn new things. So, and then I go through this phase as an artist, like, I don't want to post anything every day because then people are going to think I'm a weirdo because that's all I do is create. So I go through those phases. I promise I'm going to be on Facebook and Instagram a lot more. You know, Dusty Reed, people can follow that or friend me or whatever. And then the Cajun Picasso on Facebook and then the Cajun Picasso
on Instagram. Why not TikTok, man?
I don't know. I don't. You want to help me do that? I mean, I'm all about doing it. Seriously, I now have the opportunity to get out more.
Yeah.
I know what I could do.
So
I'm just, it's kind of a scary thing.
It is.
You know?
It is.
Because, like, I've been very lucky. I've had some really, like, some life-changing things that could have happened. Like, some big, you know, some big stuff. Advertising and things like, and I never wanted to do. Now this festival thing happened, and now I got to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've done what I could. I put everything into, you know, having art here, learning, you know, hopefully inspiring others to be able to create and paint and just love what they do, even if it's you can't do it. Yes, you can. But now, you know, I want to get more into it. I'll do some TikTokies.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go ahead and let Dusty go. But once we end this podcast, I'm going to encourage Dusty and let him know how easy it is if he does want to take the TikTok route, because there's some advantages that can come with TikTok if you use it correctly. One of the big things right now that I've seen is artists painting live. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You could do that on Facebook. It's easy to go live on Facebook, and I think Instagram too. But TikTok has a way that shows your videos to more people quicker. Like, mm-hmm. It does a broadcast, like, kind of vibe first, and then it narrows down who your target demographic is. And then from there, it scales up who might find that interesting. So cool. I've seen artists painting live and have anywhere from, you know, as little as 10 to 50 people watching, sometimes in the thousands. Mm-hmm. Just people watching. And what's cool is with TikTok Live, and I'm already kind of spilling the beans of what I was going to talk to him about, but is people can send you gifts. And by gifts, like a rose is so many cents, a heart or whatever is so many cents, or this object. And I was like, animated graphics that mm-hmm. they can send you, and it'll show up on the live. And then you get that money in the form of diamonds, and those diamonds can be redeemed for actual cash. And some people, depending on how active your live is, have made anywhere from a couple hundred bucks to $3,000 in a day.
Wow.
The higher end view count.
I
know,
but just that concept is just super cool.
It's wild.
When I'm making something, like, it's all organic, and then sometimes, you know, I'm a humble guy, but sometimes I'm like, I do something, man, that's so cool. I'm so excited that, like, because art is a learning experience, you know,
yeah.
It's always, and that's what's great about it, it's always going to change moment to moment. You might have perfected this line or this circle or this brushstroke or something like that. There's this hammer nailed thing, but then at a different time, you have stuff going on. You have, you know, your dog die, or, you know, you two thirds, something like that. It's the surface is different. It's always going to change. And I love that. I love that about art because it still will be a challenge. You know, you'll have that paint spill, you'll have that thing, and it's embracing those mistakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, happy cool. little mistakes,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, happy little mistakes.
Little Bob Ross.
Yeah, little Bobby.
All right, Dusty. Thank you for spending some time with me. And for those that have watched and or listened, thank you for sticking around, too. I know it's about an hour and 15 minutes. That seems to be the average now that we're landing at as far as time-wise. Dusty, I appreciate you coming on. And
super fun, man.
Yeah, talking it's about you fun. And Festival International. And
I'm excited about Festival. Can't I wait bet. Till people can come out and, you know, see everything. I'm going to have my booth there. I'm going to have a lot of my caging work at the Sans Souci, the Crafts Guild, and then I'm renting a space right across the street from the ACA so people will be able to, you know, see and experience my larger nice. My larger work. So yeah. I'm excited.
And so if you're listening, Festival International is April 24th through the 28th of this year. Check it out. It is one of the largest free music festivals in the country. I don't think it's the largest. I think New Orleans has one of the largest.
I guess technically.
I think it's French Quarter something. Uh-huh. French Quarter Festival.
This is a bunch, like 350,000. You know, yeah. it's just crazy. It's great for our area. Yeah, the pins and posters, you know, that keeps the festival free. Dusty doesn't get any of that money. Be cool, but no, Dusty doesn't get any of that. That's fine.
But you know what? You get the publicity, uh-huh. and hopefully you can channel that with your social media work.
With the
channel
help
that.
Of, with the help of Ben, yeah. Sure.
Okay, all right. Look, I don't mind lending a hand or two. But, yeah, man, good luck with that. I can't wait to see everybody talking about your art and the people taking photos of their pens and, you know, all that good stuff that comes with it. But, yeah, man, again, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, guys, well, that is it. We do have the audio version, too, so it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, it's on the other million different style of networks you can listen it on, or you can go to YouTube and watch it there, or Facebook, or God, I just look up the T Podcast, and it's the one with the purple logo with the big block text. Yeah, so with that, that is it. You guys have a great rest of your week. Normally, I would say great weekend because I normally do this on Friday.
It's Tuesday.
Is it? God, it's so.
I know.
Dude,
I know.
It doesn't feel like a Tuesday. I was about to say it's midweek. I'm already a day ahead. Anyway, it's time to go. Dusty, thank you again.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.